You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
A few months ago, I started thinking about these guys. So, William Macy, Felicity Huffman, he's pretty famous for that show Shameless, whatever. But they made it in the news a while back. Does anybody know why? Too long ago, it was 2011, 2018. They're involved in this thing that they named the Varsity Blues scandal. So this was a scandal involving very rich and well-heeled parents that were paying this guy to get their kids into elite colleges. And I'm here to tell you it's going to be on Netflix or it's going to be on Prime. It's going to make for a great series, because the guy that ran the scheme was unbelievable. He paid psychiatrists to get their kids IEPs so they could take longer on their exams. He paid coaches to say that these kids who weren't even athletes were needed to join the team, so they should be allowed in. He paid people to manipulate their test scores. He paid people, just like in the show Suits, they paid a Harvard graduate to actually take some kids' entrance exams. It's fascinating. So these guys got in trouble for that. And it's really interesting to read up on it, because what you find is that these people weren't, by most reports, moral monsters in any way. One of the guys was a co-manager of a law firm, a real prestigious law firm, and he regularly preached acting with integrity. And when it came to Felicity Huffman, she admitted that when she was driving her daughter to the entrance exam, she kept telling herself, turn around. Turn around, and she didn't turn around, right? So it's like, begs the question, you know, what was driving them? And nobody says for sure, at least in the little bit of research I did, except they all wanted their kids to have their dream, and their dream was getting into these elite schools. So I think if you dig down deeper there, what they wanted was for their kids to be really happy. And I don't know, it got me to thinking, you know, about this question, which is, what do we really want for our kids? What is it, right? And a lot of you guys, because you're starting out, your kids are little, you're like, I want to get out the door in the morning without a 5-alarm meltdown, right? Or, you know, I don't want my kid to be the kid who's in preschool that really isn't potty trained, whatever. Those are all legitimate, pressing, immediate needs, but what I want us to think about this morning is, you know, more of a long-term thing. And I think what's most common in the world we're living in is for people to, when they think, if they think long-term, is to consider some version of the American dream, right? What we want for our kids is for them to be wealthy, comfortable, some prestige maybe, some power, some status. I think that's just the world, that's the fish tank we swim in, that's what we breathe. But, you know, Jesus had a pretty harsh critique of that version of the end goal, right? He said, for what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit your soul? Some of those things are not bad in themselves, but they're insufficient to build a substantial life on, right? So that's what I want us to think about this morning, is what real success for our kids is going to mean down the road. And I want to argue that real success is for them to know Christ and pursue his will for their lives. A pretty famous passage right in Romans 12 where Paul said, therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. Give your lives to God. And he says, and don't be conformed to this world. One version says, don't let the world's values squeeze you into its mold, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Living for him, pursuing his will, the outcome is that which is good and acceptable and perfect. This is something that's substantial to build your life on. I recently ran across the verse in Psalm 119, verse 45, and the NIV translation of that says, I will walk about in freedom, for I have sought out your precepts or your ways. I have sought out your precepts. I'll walk about in freedom, not freedom, I can do whatever I want whenever I want. We know that's not really freedom, but the freedom to live a life the way I was designed, I want that for my kids. I want that for my grandkids. I know that's a successful and good life. That's what I want us to think about this morning. So, again, this is sort of a, this is one of those teachings where it's like, you know, like a blimp view of life. The long view, I want us to think about what we're aiming at ultimately. And to do that, I want us to look at what the Bible says is the profile of a successful adult. And one way to kind of consider that, I think, is to think through what it says there about spiritual maturity when it comes to qualities or characteristics of leaders in the church. So, right, if somebody is going to be overseeing or trying to help a group of people or trying to follow Jesus, they're going to need a certain level of spiritual maturity. And if you look at the qualifications in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus 1, there's a long list of these. We're obviously not going to spend the whole morning on that, or you wouldn't get out even until after lunch, so we're not going to do that. But we are going to take a look at like four of these, and we're going to consider them as sort of a template for spiritual maturity. Again, something for us to be aiming at, something for us to think, yeah, if my child ends up, you know, having this kind of quality in their lives, I know that they're going to be a successful adult. That's what we want to think about. So before, though, we jump into those, I just want us to walk through a couple quick reminders. One, God wants to use you as the primary influence in their lives. Proverbs 22, raise up a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they won't depart from it. Again, when your kids are wee little, it's kind of easy to believe that. You're boots on the ground. You're spending all this time with them. Of course, you're their primary influencer. Gets a little harder to believe when they get older. And the truth is, when they're teenagers, it may not be what you're saying that's influencing them at that point, but how you're living your life, that's still very much influencing them and influencing them in a big way. They're watching. So God wants to use you as your primary influencer. You can influence character, but you cannot change personality. It seems so obvious, right? But it's just good to be reminded. So, you know, you can schedule 7 play dates a week for that introverted child, and it's not going to make them an extrovert. It actually may, like, backfire altogether, right? Because it's just going to exhaust them and probably make them even that much more gun-shy being around people. So, yeah, we can influence them. We can kind of hope to direct them in a certain way, but we're not going to change personality. God wouldn't want us to do that. He's made us a certain way, our kids a certain way. And you can call for behavior in advance of right motive, right? And this is really important to remember when kids are small. People are all like, oh, but I don't want to create a little spiritual hypocrite, you know, by having them act a certain way when they're not feeling it. Well, yeah, I think that might come to bear down the road when they're older, but when they're small, you know, what you're doing when you're saying you need to say thank you for that is you're directing them in God's way, which is the best way for them to live. The same way, you know, if you have them brush their teeth when they're not feeling it, because you know that down the road, it's ultimately going to be very beneficial for them to get in the habit of brushing their teeth. It's not exactly the same, but you follow my drift. So when they're little, again, you can call for the proper behavior even when they're not feeling it. How will we influence them? By praying. And I'll just let you in on a secret. My goal, my hope, and my prayer for our time together this morning is that you leave with a newer vision, more insight in how you can pray for your kids. That's my main thing. I'm going to yammer about a bunch of other stuff, but that's the main goal. They're up against a lot, as you're going to see. We're going to teach them as best we can. I do not have the market on this, so maybe in the Q&A, you guys can, you know, things that you've seen be successful, you guys can throw in on this. And then we're also going to model imperfectly, but we're going to model as best we can some of these principles with a hope, again, of influencing them in this direction. So we're going to look at these four different qualities. There's a whole lot more in this list. I'm going to kind of just walk us through them. A successful adult is above reproach. They have a good reputation. This literally means there's nothing to grab hold of. It's the idea that if someone were to examine their life, there would be nothing to disqualify them. And I think it's a broad category, probably encompasses a whole lot. But for our purposes, I want us to really think about integrity, moral continuity, and honesty. You guys, I know I got to watch because I'm so old and you guys are not. You guys all know who Billy Graham was? Can you raise your hand? Okay. Pretty famous guy. It was said of him that the Billy Graham you saw at his evangelistic crusades where he was in front of thousands of people preaching God's word was the same guy at home. That's moral continuity and honesty. Look, we've really got to pray about this. Pray and pray and pray because the culture that your kids are growing up in has zero regard for truth. I have never in my life seen truth be such a shifting notion, right? It's like people have no concept for truth. And it seems that truth is kind of up for grabs. That's a really big deal, and it matters. We need to pray about that. As you know, your kids are going to be living more and more of their lives in the digital world, and cyberspace is made for lying and hiding. It's just the reality of it, right? So that's what the culture's about. And then as we know, personally, it's really hard to own our own failures, to be real about our own sins. They have that same inclination. And so they're up against a lot. We need to pray about that. We need to teach them to value truth. Truth matters. It really matters to God. How did Jesus describe himself? I am the way, the truth, and the life. I was thinking about the prologue to John's gospel. He says there, for of his fullness we've all received grace upon grace. The law came in through Moses, but truth and grace were realized in Jesus Christ. God is truth. Truth matters to God. And it should matter to us. You know, this is, I don't think this is something that gets a lot of press, at least. I haven't heard many teachings on the seven things that God hates. But the truth is that two out of the seven all have to do with a lack of truth. God hates a lying tongue, a false witness who pours out lies. It matters. I think it matters because, as we know, I mean, it matters for a lot of reasons, but as we know that where there isn't truth, there's a lack of trust and relationships just disintegrate. So truth is a really big issue, and being honest is as well. So because of that, what we want to do is we want to celebrate when they're honest. We want to celebrate when they're honest. When they're little and they come clean and they say, yeah, actually, I said I didn't, but I actually did eat that last cookie. We need to say, you know, that was brave of you to say that, but it was the right thing, and I'm proud of you. When they're older and they're like, I did cheat on that test, you know, again, we need to affirm that. That was the right thing to do. It's scary to take that step, but we're proud of you for doing that. We need to celebrate when they're honest. We need to correct lying and deceit. And again, this is going to be super nuanced. It depends on the age. It depends on the infraction, whatever. But we need to address that, right? It gets tricky. You know, you've got your kid who's an overt liar or whatever, you know, and then you got the sneaky kid. And it's tricky, right, how that gets addressed. But, yeah, we need to pay attention to that. And we need to remind them as teachers of what God really values, right? And so in Psalm 51, this is King David, who was so fantastic in a lot of ways, but then he blew it big time by, you know, sleeping with someone who wasn't his own wife and then having that woman's husband killed. And so when he kind of came to his senses and realized he was wrong, this is his prayer before God. He says, but you desire honesty from the womb. You do not desire a sacrifice, or I would offer one. You do not want a burnt offering. The sacrifice you desire is a broken spirit. You will not reject a broken and repentant heart. So he's being honest and vulnerable. He's owning his sin here. And this is what God wants. He wants transparency. And this is something, again, we need to reinforce and teach our kids as is appropriate due to their ages and their situations. But it's a big, big deal. And I'm hoping in our Q&A that you guys maybe have some insight into how to help, especially the kid that is super self-righteous and is in denial all the time about their own weaknesses and sins. Maybe you were that kid. Maybe you have some good insight. I don't know. But anyway, I hope we can talk about that. We want to model what it looks like to be truthful, right? So that means, again, being honest with our kids, being careful to promise, right, what we can actually come through on. We want to be true to our word, obviously. And I think we need to really be real with our kids when we blow it, when we fail them in this regard. We got to own it. So, you know, I was thinking about this and thinking through those times where I apologized to my kids growing up. And it was always like a twofold kind of reaction. There's always that sting. I wish it wasn't true, but that sting to your pride. Even when you're apologizing to a three-year-old, your pride's like, ooh, this hurts, you know, admitting that I screwed up. So there's that sting, but there's also sort of that sense of relief and joy almost at seeing how quick your kids are to forgive and to want to move on, you know. And I would argue that maybe the best way you can demonstrate grace, demonstrate, not talk about it, but show grace, is to be real with your kids, to own your own sin, and to apologize. How, because the question is, how can you possibly do that? You can do that because you know you've already been forgiven by God, right? So, so we need to model it when we can. So that's a successful life. A person with a successful life is honest, right, and has that moral integrity. Secondly, a successful adult is hospitable. Now, this is kind of a weird one when you think about it. You know, these leaders of the church, they had a lot on their plate. They had a lot to deal with, you know. They were very, very, very busy, and yet this comes up in several lists that they are called to be hospitable, and I think there's multiple reasons for it, but one really struck me. It's because God is this way. God welcomes the stranger. He welcomed each and every one of us that know him here this morning. And it wasn't just that we were strangers, but we were actually his enemies. And God welcomed us. God reached out to us. That's God's nature. And because of that, God says, well, you want to reflect what I'm like, and this is going to lead to a successful life, you welcome those that are different than you, right? So we need to pray. And why? How about this? Because the culture we live in encourages living in an echo chamber, right? We are taught, we're told that we're supposed to associate with people who look like us, who think like us, certainly who vote like us, right? That's who we're supposed to associate with and interact with, period. And as a result, you know, I don't need to tell you guys, we live in a culture that's just more and more and more alienated. Super, super alienated. The culture we live in does not foster or value real personal relating. A couple years ago, one of the pastors here, Brad, defaulted a teaching, and in the teaching he asked the question, when was the last time anyone invited you to anything? And that really struck me, because it's not commonplace anymore. Why would we? People, you have your own house, you have your own little, your world world on social media, you have your own personal entertainment. You don't need to move outside the bubble. Or maybe if you do, it's going to be with people who are just like you. That's the world we live in. And because of it, as we all know, we live in a world where it's an epidemic of loneliness, you know? That's, everybody knows about that now. I don't know what anybody's doing about it, but we live in a world where people are alienated, estranged, and extremely, extremely lonely, right? So this is the world that your kids are growing up with, and I know I'm pessimistic by nature, but I can't foresee this improving down the line. Maybe some miracle take place and it will. So that's what's going on in the culture. And then what comes to us naturally is loving ourselves and people like us. So Jesus said, you know, some of his disciples or whatever were feeling real good about how they were loving people. And he's like, look, you know, what good is how you're loving other people when you love people that are just like you? Even the most morally reprobate people do that. It's nothing, right? It's learning to love and reach outside of ourselves. When my oldest was three, I was babysitting. I was going to babysit, you know, and help bring in income. And I introduced him to the kid that I was going to start watching. And I don't know, by some miracle, he didn't say this in front of the kid, but on the way home or whatever from meeting the kid, he said, I don't like his looks. I was like, you don't like his looks? And honest to God, I just realized in this teaching that what he was really saying, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, what he was really saying is, I don't want him in our lives, and I don't want to share you with another person, right? Having this kid in our lives is going to upset the apple cart. It's going to make things uncomfortable for me. I don't like him, right? This is what comes naturally to us. So this is what we're up against. We need to teach them how to be hospitable, you know? What does that mean? Instruct them on engaging and taking interest in another. When they're little, making eye contact. When someone asks them a question, actually answering them, right? As they get older, encouraging them to ask questions of other people. I am shocked that when I meet a person now who's in their 30s, and I don't know very any of you guys very well, so it doesn't include you, but if they actually engage me, I'm like blown away. Because by and large, people do not know how to do this. So we want to teach them how to take an interest in other people. We want maybe to brainstorm with them about how to make others feel comfortable in our homes. You know, in Luke 6, that's the famous verse, Jesus says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So, you know, they're having a play date. What does your friend like to do? What's their favorite snack? And when your kid answers, you know, I don't know, peanut M&Ms, and it's really what they love, then you got to go back to the whole lying thing and work on that with them. So, yeah, but you want to get them to start thinking, right? And even if they can't answer that, I think it's okay to ask them. Just, again, prime the pump. Okay, this is a mouthful, but I think it's really good to be on the lookout for ways for them to be aware of the outsider and to include them. Okay, so here's what I mean. I mean, all of us, including your kids, at probably a young age, experience situations where they're on the outside and they're not being included, and it's painful, right? Take note of that. Of course, comfort your child and engage them about it, but also put it in the back of your mind so that when they're in a situation and there's a new kid in their class or, you know, there's a new kid that's joined their soccer team or whatever, you can point out to them, hey, remember what it was like when you tried to join the Girl Scouts and everybody knew each other and how that felt, or this other situation where you were on the outside, and reflect that back to them so they can, again, begin to have a category for, yeah, this is what life is like, and it really sucks to be on the outside, and I could maybe do something about that. So I worked for a lot of years as a librarian, and I know there's a bunch of books out there now. You know, I was thinking about Wonder, and you know, there's a bunch of books about, you know, including kids that are different or whatever. I like, this is a picture book. It's geared toward older grade school kids, so like third to fifth grade. What I liked about this book was it's a story about a new girl that comes to this class. It's not like an upper middle class classroom or anything, but this kid's clearly poorer than everybody else. And so I don't remember if it's the narrator or the main character notices this kid and realizes, you know, I could do something to help this kid out. And then the kid moves before she has a chance to do anything. So it's open-ended, and it makes for a really great discussion about what could have been done differently, how would you feel, whatever. I don't know. Just look for ways to put that in front of your kid. Model hospitality, open your house to others, host your kids' friends. Some people are better at this than others. And if you're not real good at it, watch how other people do it. Try and learn. I would set a goal to try and grow in this area. Have your kids help if you can. You know, it's interesting, right? So 1 Peter says, and this is to the leaders of the church. This is to everybody. He says, be hospitable to one another without complaint. And I was like, huh, without complaint? That means we're going to be tempted to complain. That means it could be kind of hard and awkward. But I think, again, you want to build your life on something substantial. You want success. You know, the best things in life are difficult. You know, we've done several years where we had IFI students come to our Thanksgiving dinner, and it's always made for a little more awkward kind of situation. But it's been a really good thing, and I think it's been especially good for my younger grandkids to see that. Anyway, so a successful adult is honest, has integrity, right, and they are hospitable. But they also don't love money. They also don't love money. Money does not rule their lives, and they are generous, right? Why do we need to pray about this? We need to pray about this because our culture teaches that money is the key to a good life, and we always need more. I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, but I am going to go on a little old lady rant right now, so brace yourselves. Okay, everybody got one of these, right? So this is the Amazon Christmas wish list that came out in like August or something ridiculous, right? I'll tell you what struck me about this was it just drove home how much consuming now is woven into every part of our lives. I felt like what was insidious about this was it just made it like a part of your life. There were stickers. There were word searches. There were interacting games. You could say, Alexa, I'm on page 50 of the catalog. Tell me something about these toys, whatever. You could play Roblox connected somehow to this. Consuming, you know, people have always marketed to kids, even back when I was a kid. But the difference was spending was an event, you know? You had to decide in advance. You had to go somewhere. You had to purchase it. It was an event. Now, it's just like you just click a button and it's over with. You don't think about it, whatever. And I think what this has done is it's blurred that line between want and need. And it's concerning, I think, you know? If we want to be people who have a right relationship with money, I think it's concerning. It was also weird there's no prices on this thing. Did you guys notice that? There's not a single price in this catalog. I don't even want to give you my theory about that. So anyway, the culture, spending, whatever, it's no big deal. And what comes naturally, right, is to live yourself. So we need to pray about this. We want our kids to have the right attitude about money and to be rightly related to it. We want to pray literally that they be radically different. You're thinking, who is this handsome devil? Is this her husband? No, this isn't my husband. It's not even my father. This guy's name is R.G. Turnow. I think if I'm pronouncing it right, Turnier it might be. Anyway, this guy made his mark in the world of earth-moving machinery. It means nothing to us. He was phenomenally successful. By the end of his life, he had 299 patents. Here's the thing about this guy. When they first got married, he and his wife decided they were going to live on 10% of their money, and they were going to give the 90% to God's kingdom. Now, I'm guessing that 10% made for a pretty comfortable life. But my point is, who does this? In our culture, who does this? In our culture, it's like, dude, this is my money. I earned it. I will spend it the way I want to. And their attitude was, no, it's not my money. It's something God's entrusted me with. And I'm going to try and use it to further his kingdom and his work, right? What we're praying for is that our kids would be radically different. So we need to pray. We need to teach them about not loving money. Let me back that one up, right? So when they are lusting for that iPhone 17, you know, maybe they need a new phone. I don't know. But, you know, to ask them, hey, do you really think this is going to make you more popular, more sexy? I don't know. Give you more power with your friends? We need to point out, you know, when they do buy that thing that they've been, I got to have it. And then 2 weeks later, it doesn't mean anything. Gently point out, you remember how you were feeling about that thing? And now it's interesting, right? That thing isn't that important. Look for those teachable moments. You need to teach them to be grateful. Get them to say, yes, I gave my granddaughter a Lego set. She didn't ask for it for Christmas, and she was not happy. And so through her tears, her parents are saying, hey, tell Grammy that you're thankful. Tell Grammy thank you. She's like, thank you. And dude, like 10 minutes later, she put the thing together and was like as happy as could be. So teach them to say thank you. Teach them about the world, how people really live, about poverty, God's heart for the poor. Jeremiah, speaking for God, says, is this not what it means to know me, that you plead the cause of the needy and the afflicted? God cares about the poor. You know, I was really heartened to see in our church that a while back, we have a clothing community outreach thing, and they were talking about that ministry, and there were pictures of people there, you know, working in this pantry with their kids. And that's just such a great thing. Find ways to get your kids out there actually volunteering and engaging with people who are different than them and who are more underserved than they are. And teach them the joy of being generous. You know, when they actually do share, and point out, gee, didn't that feel great? No. Well, yeah, I think it did, you know, because secretly it did feel great. But point that out, because that's how God's wired us. I love what Paul says to people who are rich. He says, instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. I love that, right? Be generous and share. Why? Because this is where life, where that substantial life is going to exist. So we want to teach them, and we want to model it. And again, maybe you guys have ideas about this, but include them in family discussions about money. If you're able to maybe sponsor somebody in a third world country, make sure that they know about that. Maybe pray about that child or whatever. Include them. When God lays it on your heart to maybe spontaneously give, share that with him, not in a braggy way, but just, hey, you know, there was this horrible hurricane that hit this horrible island where people hardly have any money, and so I feel like, you know, we should give some of our money there. Your neighbor's house catches on fire, whatever. But let them know when it's appropriate, you know, and then also demonstrate your own joy when you're able to give, because this is where life really does reside. So, successful life includes honesty and integrity, welcoming the outsider, right? Having a right relationship to money, not being ruled by money. And then lastly, they can say no to themselves. The profile of a successful adult is someone who's able to say no to themselves. This gets a ton of press. Right? They're not addicted to wine. They're not self-willed. They're not quick-tempered. It is a big deal. We take it for granted, I think, a lot of the times, until we see somebody's life is on fire because of a lack of this, and then we're like, oh, gosh, you know, that's a real shame that they weren't able to get that under control. We need to pray because the culture promotes satisfying urges and makes it super easy to do so. I started going down that rabbit hole, looking up the most recent statistics on porn use and teenagers on the internet. Then I was like, what's the point? You guys already know this. right? And it's not just porn, it's anything. We can have anything delivered to our door. And again, I don't see that changing going forward. So satisfying those urges, easy as can be, right? Now, I stayed away from an older woman with a big bowl of popcorn in front of her because that would have been too close to home because I cannot say no when it comes to popcorn. Anyway, what comes naturally is living to satisfy whatever urge comes our way. That's just the long and the short of it, right? So we need to teach them to be self-controlled. We need to tell them no, right, when they need to hear it. We need to tell them no. Do you guys know this? I'm usually the last person to know. But you're not supposed to tell your dog no now. Literally, it's a thing. You're not supposed to tell your dog no, right? And I'm all about distraction. I'm all about positive reward. But look, when your dog destroys your couch or nips your two-year-old when they're stealing the cookie out of her hand, I think no and then some is appropriate, right? We need to hear no. They need to hear no, especially when they're small. We shy away from it, right? Because there's a price to pay. You got to pay a price. I recently was reading a book where the author made the point, look, in the world we live in, just the way things are, we either pay the price of self-discipline or we pay the price of regret. That's just the way our world works, right? And so we gotta say no to them when they're little, especially, and we got to continue, even when we know it's going to cost. We need to instruct them on short-term versus long-term outcomes. Again, you know, depending on the age and the situation. But if your kid decides to go ahead and do that school project a week before it's due, and then somebody invites them to something the night before, you know, point out, dude, do you see? You made that choice, and now you're able to go to that OSU basketball game or whatever, even though your project's due tomorrow because you got it done. You know, point those out so that they can see, yeah, I made this choice, and now I'm experiencing, you know, hopefully this positive outcome. Let them fail and experience the consequences. It's the opposite of this, but if they don't, they'll never learn that their choices matter, right? They'll never learn that they need to exercise self-control. So back in the dark ages, there used to be this thing called a newspaper. Maybe you've heard about them. And people would have them brought to their homes. And they would actually have people do that job. And usually it was younger people. And so one of our kids, actually all of our kids had that job. But one of our kids got fired from that job. And, you know, we could have intervened. It was clear that they were dropping the ball. And it was honestly pretty embarrassing to have your kid get fired from as a paper boy. And it was hard on him for a minute. Anyway, but it was the right thing for him to do. If we had intervened, you know, yeah, it was embarrassing. Not as embarrassing as the $150 that he had to spend and lost textbooks in middle school, but it was embarrassing just the same. Don't intervene, even though it's painful. Let them experience that. Otherwise, they'll never understand that their choices are really matter. We want to model self-control. This gets sticky, but especially I would say if we know we've got an issue with our temper, face it. Be honest about it. Talk to somebody. You know, and if you feel like you're stuck or you're not making progress here, get help. Maybe professional help if you need it. But be real about these areas. You know, again, God gives us all these things to enjoy, right? Food, drink, entertainment, even our hobbies, whatever. But, you know, Paul said, you know, I'm free to do whatever I want, but I'm not going to let anything master me. And so, yeah, we need to be real about those things. And look, I don't know anybody that's got everything in perfect balance. So, you know, that just ain't going to happen in this broken world. But when we realize we're swinging this way or we're swinging that way, my encouragement would be to be real about it. So, we're winding up here now. Let me just say, this teaching is thinking down the road. What do we really want for our kids, ultimately? 18 years from now, or whatever ages your kids are, when they're finally launched, hopefully, and they're adults, what is it we want? Yeah, well, according to what we find in the Bible, the profile of a successful adult means they're going to be honest and have integrity. They're going to be hospitable. They'll welcome the person that's the outsider. They won't be a lover of money. And they will be self-controlled. They'll be able to say no to themselves. And again, you're like, look, you don't know my kid and you don't know me. This is kind of a hopeless cause. I do know me. I do know my kids. And I know that there's real struggles and real weaknesses, but I also know God's grace comes to bear in this area in a huge way, so many different ways. One way for us, looking back on it, is if you can be in community with other believers, then, you know, God is gracious to bring other people to influence your kids' lives. And that's a real critical thing and a really helpful thing. But there's other ways that God's grace comes to bear on this. And the last thing that, you know, that God would want you to do is just throw up your hands and be like, this is way above my head. Now, I would just go before him and say, I need help here. Show me one step I can take in this direction. And I would encourage you to take time to think about this end goal. And especially, again, back to what I said in the beginning, plan how you will pray. I don't know if you guys have a system for prayer. And I know, again, you know, you got this kid with a temper, and you know, when you pray for that kid, you're praying about that temper. This kid who's so lazy, and you're praying about that for this kid. And that's legit, you know, for sure. But my encouragement would be to, again, step back and think, you know, I'm going to start to pray. Maybe I'll take this week, or whenever I think about this kid through this next month, I'm going to start to pray about this issue of them being, you know, a person of moral integrity, being really honest, being able to own their own sin. Or I'm going to pray about them being the person that's able to welcome the outsider for the next week or whatever. I just encourage you to really think about how you're going to pray about this. You know, when I think about my grandkids, again, I know what their weaknesses are, and I'm tempted to focus, and I do pray about those. But I got really excited just praying about them recently about, Lord, how cool is it going to be down the road if they grow up to be people who are super generous and do not aren't controlled by money? And then to look forward to how God's going to answer that prayer. I think that could be really cool. And lastly, receive input from others about your kids. I contend it's harder to talk about how you're raising your kids than it is about your sex life, even for women. So you're just too raw and vulnerable. But receive input. This may be a way that God answers prayer for you. To have someone from the outside come in and make an observation or challenge you in some way. Don't just bristle and throw it away, but really try and consider that. That could be God answering a prayer in a way you wouldn't expect. Lord, thanks for these guys. Thanks again that... I don't know, that you've placed in them a desire to not just see their kids, you know, experience the American dream or experience just happiness, whatever that is, but they want more for their kids, Lord. Thank you that you affirm that. Thank you that you're 150% for our kids. Thank you that... you want them to be successful in the deepest sense of the word, and you're all about making that happen. So I just pray that people could leave encouraged here with maybe one or two thoughts about how they can apply some of the stuff we talked about this morning. Yeah, just thanks, too, for the rich fellowship we have in this church and how what a help that is that we don't have to raise our kids by ourselves. And I just personally am super grateful for that. Amen.